Well, good morning, everybody. Nice to see you all, and nice to be back, sort of back. I miss visiting, and well, frankly, I miss leaving the house. How about you guys? Well, it's lightening up a little bit. The other day, my family and I had the audacity to sit down in a restaurant. It was very exciting. We almost didn't know how to sit anymore, but we managed. So this has been an eventful week, and I have some thoughts to share, and a few songs to share, and a couple of stories. So let's begin with a song. I used to dream out loud. Just being human made me proud. Now I throw my hands up in the air from disillusion and despair. My heart is taken such abuse. Use my hurt as my excuse. It's like my hope has disappeared behind the shadow of my fear. And I wonder why they say that aging thins the skin. Then I remember I am only one, but I am not alone. I don't need to do everything. No, I can right one wrong, I can sing one song. I don't need to do everything. It's time to dive back in, yeah. It's time to live again. I am unjaded. What if you have to fall to grow? I've fallen hard enough to know. So what if life's not fair? Does it mean that I'm too cool to care? And I wonder when I stopped believing right will win. Then I remember I am only one, but I am not alone. I don't need to do everything, no. I can right one wrong, I can sing one song. I don't need to do everything. It's time to dive back in, yeah. It's time to live again, unjaded. What kind of life would I live with my heart closed? What kind of man would I be? What kind of world will I be creating if I can love with all of me? If I just love with all of me. I am only one, but I am not alone. I don't need to do everything on my own. I can right one wrong, I can sing one song. I don't need to do everything. I am only one, but I am not alone. I don't need to do everything, no. I can right one wrong or sing one song. I don't need to do everything. It's time to dive back in, yeah. It's time to dive back in. Oh, it's time to live again. I am unjaded. Unjaded. There's a long list of people that I could, whose stories I could tell right now that would serve something along the lines of the same purpose. There's among the people that I know of in the story of America, One of the truly most spectacular is a woman named Fannie Lou Hamer. I don't know how many of you are familiar with her. And maybe more importantly, I have no idea why I learned nothing about her in school. Absolutely nothing. I don't know if her name was ever mentioned. Fannie Lou Hamer was born, she's the granddaughter of slaves, left school at the age of 12 to become a sharecropper to survive. Grew up in Mississippi under stifling and violent racism and segregation. And in her early 40s, she had uterine cancer, had a hysterectomy. And to give you an idea of the climate of the time for a black woman in Mississippi, she didn't have a hysterectomy. She didn't go in knowing she was going to have a hysterectomy. She went in for an operation, and the doctor, a white doctor, with the tacit approval of the state of Mississippi, gave her a hysterectomy, and had been in the process of secretly and without consent sterilizing poor black women in the state of Mississippi to reduce the number of black babies being born in the state of Mississippi. This was in her early 40s. At 43, a group of voting rights activists arrived in her small town, and she learned for the first time at 43 that it was her constitutional right to vote. No one had told her, and she had had no idea. These activists then invited the locals, including her, to walk over to the county registrar's office and register to vote. And 17 of them did. And I don't know if you've ever raised your hand and volunteered for something where your life was on the line, but that was what those 17 people did that day. She raised her hand along with the others, and they, on their way to register to vote, were arrested and beaten in jail. And when she returned from jail, she found that her field had been taken from her, her sharecropping field, that she'd been essentially fired from her her supposed small business, you know, self-employment. And I don't know what you would do under those circumstances, and I certainly think that I would fold. And what she did instead was became a voting rights activist at the age of 43. The next year, at a bus station where there were whites-only benches, she refused to get up, still in a town in Mississippi, and was arrested, and that time was beaten so viciously that she had internal and external injuries for the rest of her life. She was disabled by that beating. Needless to say, that didn't stop Fannie Lou Hamer either. She then started essentially an alternative Democratic Party delegation from Mississippi. Right? Again, this is a woman who had, I believe it was, oh yeah, sixth grade education, okay? And a sharecropper until she was 43 when she learned she could vote. She started, I'm going to look up the name of it, the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party. Because the entire Democratic Party delegation from the state of Mississippi was white, even though the black population of Mississippi may actually have been a majority. And there were no black representatives in the Democratic Party for the state of Mississippi. So she started one and then crashed the Democratic National Convention with these black delegates and demanded on national television that they be seated as rightful representatives of the black citizens of Mississippi. Lyndon Johnson attempted to stifle her by holding an impromptu press conference over her own speechifying on this subject of rightful representation for black people in Mississippi. And to some extent he succeeded, but he really didn't. They actually did end up being seated. as black representatives. And then this woman, and this is of course with she lived her entire this entire adult life with death threats and with gunfire and you know attempts at oppression of any kind of every kind. In 1971, this woman Fannie Lou Hamer ran for the United States Senate for the state of Mississippi. She didn't win, but she did. To my mind, what she demonstrated was the ultimate commitment and courage and even patriotism. I mean, talk about an unjaded life. A woman who caught fire with a demand for justice and equality and respect and lived out the rest of her life. She died in 1977. Lived out the rest of her life with that demand for not for special treatment, but for equal treatment. An extraordinary woman. And the thing I wanted to talk about today, you know, we've had a week, well, hell, we've had a year or a few years. Actually, I've heard one of the funniest things I've heard people say lately is, what a year this week has been. I think that's pretty funny. you know, but one of the things that I find most challenging is to make the decision to continue to care. It's hard. It's hard to keep, as Jesse Jackson used to say, keep hope alive. It's hard to believe that there's good happening sometimes. And it's hard. I mean, the reason why we tell a story like a Fannie Lou Hamer, the reason why we tell a story like a Gandhi, even though these people would tell you 1,000 times that they're ordinary people and that's what makes them extraordinary, the truth is most of us don't dare to care that consistently and through that many tribulations. The skin is going to callous. You know, the heart is going to get desensitized. It's the daring to care, I think, that makes someone like Fannie Lou Hamer so extraordinary and so inspiring, that she didn't throw her hands up in despair, like I say I do in that song, and say, this country is never going to treat me as an equal. And instead, she demanded that it did and kept on demanding it in the face of headwinds and all kinds of opposition and resistance. I don't think I've got that in me. But when you look at somebody like that, you think it is possible to continue to care. In fact, she does something maybe even more interesting. She actually makes my excuses for not caring seem kind of pathetic. You know, I mean, my excuse for not caring is, I don't know what, that I've been singing songs for 23 years and the music industry has never written me a six-figure check. Oh, boo-hoo, you know. What is it? What have you got to complain about? I mean, maybe I'm not diminishing it. You probably have things, and I do, right? We have hurts. We have setbacks. Unfortunately for all of us, we were all raised by human beings, so therefore our childhoods were messed up one way or another, almost everybody, if not everybody. We all grow up needing therapy one way or another. So we've all got, you know, broken bones and broken hearts. But how many people face the kind of resistance that Fannie Lou Hamer faced and continue to care and make no excuses? I make more excuses probably in a day than she made in a lifetime. And this week, as I say, this week challenges you and me to continue to care, really regardless of the outcome of the vote, right, which we now know. But, I mean, I don't see any kits being sold at grocery stores with like sandpaper to wear away the thickened jaded skin that we've all had to grow to cope with quarantine and death counts and political bleeding and infighting and insult and the fear and the unemployment. I don't know how you get thinner skin again and feel again and care again, other than to make a decision that really is among the most courageous that a person can make. And so, as I say, I think of Fannie Lou Hamer, among other things, as this incredible model for somebody who dares me to dare to care like she dared to, right? Now, fast forward, I can't help but talk about my boy, given that he is, of course, the most beautiful child in the world, and the smartest and most talented. It's an amazing trifecta and really a bizarre coincidence. We had a significant loss in our family. I think it's been just over a month now. I'm talking a little quieter. I don't think he's right outside the door, but he's probably upstairs. But we had his dog, Gigi, that we adopted a year and a half ago. She was his pride and joy. We adopted her little, maybe 1 year old, funny, feisty, little black Scotty dog, maybe a little Cairn Terrier, little funny, sweet, unbelievably affectionate little creature. We brought home from the shelter, and she was cuddling in my lap the first afternoon, just thanking me and my wife and Jude for bringing her home. And she would sleep in Jude's bed, and Jude is 8, so when I drive him to school in the mornings, he would always want Gigi to come with me so that his friends could say hi to Gigi, because, she's always poking her head either out the window or standing next to me where she shouldn't be, in the middle console of the car. I mean, he loved that dog. And then just about 5 weeks ago, Gigi found an unsecured trap, a rat poison trap, and ate the rat poison and died. She died. It took her 4 days to die. And we did have a chance to say goodbye, and we did attempt to save her life. I mean, we went to greater measures than I ever thought I would do. I love animals. Don't tell anybody, but more than people most of the time. We also are an unemployed family, more or less, and we don't have deep pockets, and we don't have big wads of cash or a trust fund, and we're looking at hospital bills that are kind of comparable to human hospital bills. It was pretty intense, but we had to try to save Jude's best friend. And we tried, and she died, right? So, of course, I was sad, very sad, but I was in third place for sadness. My wife was in second, and then Jude, absolutely distraught. And life is about giving and receiving. Life is about winning and losing. Life is about meeting and saying goodbye. It is. And you can't insulate somebody from the sensation of loss. Why you can't? Why would you want to? You just can't. That being said, I wouldn't have wanted it to be under those circumstances. Nor, frankly, would I have wanted it to be at the age of 8. His grieving, which was very deep, turned into wanting another dog. And within just 2 or 3 weeks, he started. In fact, Gigi's been gone now at least 6 weeks then, because we've been looking. So my wife and I aren't going to say, we're not going to insist, but we're not going to say no. If that's his process, and he's, if he's got space in his heart and his, in his life again for another dog, if he, this is a part of the daring to care. I mean, if he's prepared to love another dog rather than throw up his hands and say, oh, I'm not doing that again, right? Which anyone could be forgiven for doing, and I think most of us have done. We fall in love, and we get our hearts broken, and we say, oh, hell, I am not doing that again. Or some people would get married and get divorced and say, I am not doing that again. Or you try for a big job or a big promotion, or you apply to a college and you don't get it, whatever it is, and you, oh, no, no, and I'm not doing that. And the reason we say I'm not doing that again, of course, is because it hurts. Ask 40-year-olds how long it takes to ski, to learn to ski. And then ask 5-year-olds. 5-year-olds, it takes 10 minutes. Wee, I fell. Wee, I fell. Wee, I fell. And by the end of the first hour, they're sliding down the mountain on greasy sticks, and they don't mind. But if you ask a 40-year-old, how long does it take to learn to ski? Oh Jesus. Do I have to do this? Because I can think of so many ways I could die. I just don't want this to end as badly as I think it could end. And of course, it's that fear keeps, I think, many 40-year-olds from ever taking their first ski lesson. But those who do, it takes them 3 winters to get comfortable on their skis, because all they see is, remember how Sonny Bono died? And all they see is a tree that could very quickly become an unwelcome guest in their face, you know? And you know, they know the physics of it. They know they don't know how to stop. They know there are other people on the mountain who have lawyers. I mean, there's just lots of scenarios that are unpleasant to play out in your mind learning how to ski. So naturally, we don't, right? Literally and metaphorically, the older we get, we tend not to want to learn to ski because we can think of too many ways it can go wrong. So our boy says he wants another dog. We say, okay. Well, it turns out it's very tricky to adopt a dog during a pandemic when every shelter is closed. All they're doing is they are kenneling these dogs by the thousands, as far as we can tell, posting their pictures on their websites and saying, if you would like to meet one of these dogs, not all of them, you can meet one, and you must make an appointment and get in line. And we did this for several dogs. We have no basis for liking the dog other than a gut feeling, a name, a facial expression in the little picture. We have no information, but he's all in on getting another dog. So we try several times. And I'm sorry that dog has now been adopted. I'm sorry that dog we've discovered is not, you know, has some behavioral issues. You know, whatever. Multiple swings and misses, right? And Jude continues to dare to want another dog. And so we decide on a kind of a spur of the moment to go to a PetSmart, which has dog adoptions a few locations. They used to have more, but now everybody's nervous about, you know, breathing the air and so on and so on. So we go to a PetSmart adoption, and we walk up to the front curb, the very first attempt we make in person to see a dog, and there, looking right back at us, is a dog that looks just like Gigi, just a little bigger, and a boy, and he's precious and soft and quiet, which we like gentle in our family. And we're looking at each other. Is this dog available for adoption? And the woman runs the charity. Yeah. Okay. And we took him for a little walk around PetSmart, and we came back and we looked at each other. Anybody feeling a no? No. Okay. We'll bring him home. So we brought him home, and we now have another dog. That being said, we brought him home on Friday, 2 days ago, and by the end of Friday night, he was gone because he had run away 3 times in 1 day as an adopted dog who had probably lived on the street his entire life. And I texted the woman who runs the charity, and I said, he got out the first time and 6 neighbors had to corral him on the street. Then he got out, and my wife and I managed to corral him, and it's 10:30 at night, and he just knocked down our gate and got out, and I don't know if we'll ever see him again. And I have to tell my boy when he wakes up that his dog is gone. The woman texted back, I'm so sorry, but someone will find your dog. And sure enough, at 9 o'clock in the morning, the next morning, I had to tell Jude in the morning that we might never see, and by the way, we called him Lucky. We might never see Lucky again.
But 9 o'clock in the morning, someone had found him in their front yard and called him, and Lucky is now upstairs cuddling with Jude. But while I'm talking about Jude daring to care, I also feel like it's worth mentioning Lucky's daring to care, right? So the only thing we know about Lucky is that he was at some point a companion for a homeless man, okay? Which means he slept on the street, means he scavenged for food and water. It means he was never given a proper bath, most likely because there probably wasn't available. It means he probably never slept in a bed, right, or anything especially soft. So Lucky arrives at this house, and it is this house, my God, it's falling down. We just bought it over Thanksgiving last year. We didn't know the meaning of the words fixer-upper. We thought, how bad could it be? How hard could it be? Then it started flooding. Then it started leaking. Then the plumbing started breaking. Then we found out the electrical is unsafe. Then it has no air conditioning in 120-degree summer. Then the floors are broken. Then the foundation is sideways. Then the main beams are termite-eaten. I mean, my Lord, I was just saying to Michael before we started, I'm a little beat up from, I've become much more of a home renovator than a musician. That's not true. I've been singing a lot online. But it's kind of a 50-50 split. If you look closely, there's a wound. That was a, let's see, what knocked my forehead? I can't even remember. How ironic. This, I remember, was a piece of wood falling on my nose as I assembled a ceiling for my wife's jewelry workshop. I already showed Michael my finger the fingernail is coming off. I do not want to show you that, whether it's morning or afternoon. Whatever meal's coming up, you don't want to see my fingernail. So I've been doing these home renovations on this house. But if we had a trust fund or an inheritance and we could move out of this house for 3 months, it's on a hill. There is a half an acre of land that this house is on. The woman who owned this house lived here for 35 years, and as far as we can tell, for at least 20 of them did not go in the backyard. Literally. It was overrun like a state park that lost its funding. Weeds so big they look like trees. Just no organization, no landscaping, no paving, no steps, no nothing, no grass, no sprinkler system, just this feral field on a hillside. Ask me if I think, or if we would naturally think, that this would be paradise for a dog. Of course it is. But not for Lucky. Because Lucky has learned, and I mean, not to overly personify this, I don't know how you feel about, you know, animals and their feelings and so on. But Lucky has learned in just a couple of years of living that food must be stolen, that water has to be scavenged, right? That sleeping is on the ground, that companionship is fleeting. So we bring him into this fallen down around our ears house, and this yard that is essentially a wild animal's paradise, and there's some wild animals back there. And all he can think to do is get out. Right? This is what I learned years ago. This is an attachment disorder. This is a disbelief that we are actually going to stick by him. A disbelief that he now has a family with all the good at least, that implies. A disbelief that he can settle in, rest inside, feel like a part of something, and live out his days in a kind of comfort that he has never seen, right? And with that disbelief, he runs. Because whatever he's got here, you know, as my bubby used to say, you know what you got, but you don't know what you're going to get. And she used that as a reason to kind of take no chances. And Lucky wanted out because Lucky knew the streets. Lucky knew freedom and scavenging and sleeping out there. Lucky doesn't know a home. Lucky doesn't know cuddling. Lucky doesn't know a little boy who lets him lick his face. Lucky doesn't know any of these things. Lucky, actually, to live in this family is essentially going to have to forget the lessons he's learned and allow himself, obviously, most likely this is only on a deep unconscious level, right? But he's going to have to unlearn the lessons that trusting and caring and belonging doesn't last and doesn't work and isn't real and isn't safe. He's going to have to unlearn those lessons and allow himself to care for a family and be cared for by a family. He's going to have to allow himself to feel that. I told Jude, we're in for a little while here where the memory of scavenging and struggle is going to have to fade. We're going to have to be so reliable that he dares to care about us and trust us again, you know, for the first time in his life. So to wrap around to opening with God Bless America and the election we just experienced, does anybody here feel like lucky? Feel a little bit like, and I'm not calling what political party I'm in, what political party you're in, doesn't matter. Does anybody wonder what country this is? How peace prevails? How sanity is restored? How we can all more or less get along in a way that I'm not sure we did in the good old days, but it sure feels like we did. I'm not a big believer in the good old days concept in general, but these days I'm feeling like there was a good old days. So how do we allow ourselves to trust political process, our culture, our society, our neighbors, other states in the union? Again, it doesn't matter what perspective you've got. What's life like without caring? I would argue it's severely diminished. Without daring to care, Jude doesn't get another dog. A 40-year-old doesn't learn to ski. A 25-year-old doesn't ask the girl out. Guy doesn't ask the girl out. A first-time voter doesn't register to vote. A first-time eligible doesn't register to vote. Someone doesn't run for office if they don't dare to care. There are high costs in a relationship from not daring to care, right? Oh, I've been hurt before. We all know what it's like to hold back 10% of us or 50% of us, of ourselves, from a relationship. That relationship ain't gonna work. Right, it needs a marriage, for example, needs all of you. Right, you withhold 6% just in case you get hurt, and you never fully experience that feeling of home and belonging and security that ostensibly is why you got married in the first place. If Lucky continues to attempt to run. Right, if he never forgets that fear, and I won't blame him if he doesn't, but a part of us is going to hesitate then. It will cause just an inch and a half of distance, and we don't want any distance. We want to squeeze that little dog until he feels so loved he can barely stand it. Right? So will he dare to care again? Each of us right now is faced with a post-election, hopefully late-stage pandemic. Who knows anymore? But we have all been confronted with challenges to our capacity to care, to be brave, to believe in a better future. And again, I would recall the example of Fannie Lou Hamer, a granddaughter of slaves. The day she was born, she had reason to be deeply, permanently jaded. The day she was sterilized against her will, she had reason and cause and justification to give up entirely on the American experiment. The day she found out that she'd lived 42 years without knowing she was allowed to vote, the day she was jailed and beaten for trying to register to vote. Any of these moments she could have given up reasonably and not dared to care for the rest of her life. But her caring made a spectacular difference in the civil rights movement and in the story of America. And Jude daring to care about another dog is going to change the trajectory of his life, right? Daring to ski down a mountain as a grown-up, if you've never done it because it terrifies the hell out of you, I suggest you try it. On a bunny hill, find a small slope and a decent teacher. You won't believe how good it feels. I couldn't believe it. First time I skied, I was 29, 30. Oh my God. I used to say that if I had one day to live, I'd want to ski. That's how good it feels to sail down a mountain with the vista and the silence and the trees. I mean, it's special. It's special. But you don't learn to ski if you don't dare to risk falling. So we have all just been through one huge risk. And we have all, honestly all, I don't think there are exceptions. We have all been knocked for a loop by the pandemic for sure. And many of us, I think, by the political goings on as well. So what does your life look like in 2021 if you close up shop and don't risk anymore? Can you feel how muted your happiness would be? Right? That there'd be a piece of you missing from your relationships, a piece of you missing from your citizenship, a piece of you missing from your art if you're an artist, a piece of you missing from your work. Right? We know what it feels like to hold a piece of us back. So as a minister friend of mine likes to call it, a choice point. Forget the country. For each of us, 330 million of us, we are each truly, certainly the grown-ups anyway, are at a choice point. Do we dare to care again? Do we dare to believe that we hold these truths to be self-evident? Do we dare to believe that God really does bless America? Do we dare to believe that we truly do live in the world's longest lasting democracy? Or do we drown all those beautiful thoughts out with cynicism and with thick skin and with hurt? And in our own lives, we have all lost. We've all lost things. We've all had scary diagnoses to ourselves, to people we love. Do we dare to live large, laugh loud, sleep well, eat an extra hot fudge sundae? Do we dare to fall in love again? Do we dare to get another pet when our pet dies in our arms? Right? It's a choice point. And it all wraps up in courage and clarity and an acknowledgement that no matter what the earthly things going on, no matter what the noise, no matter the chaos, we are actually born okay and die okay. And in between, with all the clutter, with all the disillusion, with all the hurts, all the broken moments, we are born and live our lives fundamentally in our souls okay. That what we think we're risking, we're not actually risking. That to dare to care is to truly be alive. Let me sing you a song to close.